The lot is gonna run off a few more handouts. I think I got around 25, so she'll run them off and we'll go ahead and get started because we don't want to get too far behind. And if she runs them off, I'll have her just raise your hands as she comes in if you don't have a handout for the time being. If you don't mind sharing, that would be great. I'm Gina Frieden. I'm from the Department of Human and Organizational Development at Peabody College. I'm a licensed psychologist and have an interest in grief and loss and adult development and stress management. I work a lot with graduate students. I'm the director of the training program for our graduate students that are going into the counseling field. So I see a lot of stress. I often tell students that are coming into our program, I validate their reality by saying, you're here to help people learn how to manage stress, and what we do to get you there is stress you out, which is exactly what happens to graduate students. I mean, your world revolves around role conflicts, role demands, and trying to find a centered place to be, to achieve some balance and feel at peace with your world. Now, my mission, as I understood it, and what I will do is get just a few of your expectations, because one of the things that's important to me is to make sure that what we're talking about is matching what you're coming here for. But my understanding is to talk a little bit about what we know in terms of graduate student stress, gender differences. But here's what happened last time. We started focusing on the first part of the workshop, and we didn't get through really practical applications. And I want you all to lead with something. So what I'm going to do is make sure that we spend some time at the end of this that you have, that you're physically walking out with some kind of stress management plan for yourselves. To a certain extent, we'll be talking in general about stress. But the idea here, folks, is that as we're talking, I want you to start thinking right off the bat about what your coping style is, because we want to tailor this to you so that when you're walking out of here, you're actually walking away with some ideas that you can put into practice. How many of you already have ways of managing stress? How many of you stick to those ways of managing stress? Why is it that the thing that gets cut out of most of our practice and our lives is ways of self-care and self-nurturing? What happens in graduate school that creates this particular press that all we have all day long are the checkoff lists to make sure we're getting accomplished all the goals and requirements and duties of being a good graduate student? We want to talk about how to shift and think about management differently, where you're managing not just stress, you're managing your energy. You're using your energy productively to meet the goals that you have for yourself. So with that regard then, the learning objectives here, we're going to look at, and I'm going to have you guys spend some time broken out in diets, not in breakdown groups, but in diets, talking about stress triggers. And here's the biggest issue today, central to you, is I want you to begin to identify a typical coping style you have, a typical pattern that you have around how you approach stress. After we do that, I'm going to then ask you what your practices are to offset stress. What are the things that you do in your personal life to develop wisdom around how to self-care, self-nurture, and be more productive ultimately in reaching your goals? Talk about those particular things, and I want you being able again to walk out with something that's concrete. So it won't just be me coming at you with lecture. I don't think that's the most helpful way to learn. I think that we need to have some time where you guys are in conversation with yourself and with each other around how to promote the best stress plan for you. So with that, let me give you just a little bit of information on stress. Things that you probably already know, but I want to touch on just a few things I think that are central before we start looking at your ways of handling stress. First of all, we're never going to get rid of stress. Stress in and of itself isn't a bad thing. There's even a condition called eustress. Eustress is positive stress. If we have no stress in our lives at all, we're either bored or we're dead. There's a place in stress where we are aroused at the optimal level. If you've ever read Chip sent me his book on flow. You know that there's a concentrated energy that goes with production, with achievement, and even with balance. And so what we want to do is strive for the optimal balance between eustress and not becoming in the area too much of distress. And here's the second point. You will have distress in clients. There's no other way around it. There are going to be times that you are managing your life just fine and something comes along and pulls the rug out from under you. A chronic illness, a death, a divorce, a move. Something comes up that, a loss of job, something that comes up that promotes in you a need to have to juggle the balls in the air. So we want to develop not a way to fix or cure ourselves of stress. We want to develop a relationship to our stressors. And when I was probably 4 or 5 years ago, I evaluated along with a colleague a stress management plan at St. Thomas Hospital. It was for both their employers and people in the community, and we were evaluating on two dimensions, anxiety and depression. And we found that there were three key practices that are associated with reductions in both depression and anxiety, and also we were looking at hostility, anger management. And I'm going to talk about those three key practices in a minute. The second thing I want to mention before we kind of launch into this a little bit more is differences in relationship around gender. And one of the things that comes up, I think, in conversations like this, and I want to make this very clear, this is not pitting men against women. This is for men as much as it's for women. And sharing the notion that in academia, we are still somewhat structured by a hierarchical system. Power and control issues are real sources of experience. They don't necessarily have to be sources of stress, but they are sources out there that you have to contend with on a daily basis, both in the work that you do in your academic life in terms of channeling your energies around papers and deadlines and studying, and also just in the relationships that are built in around, let's say you're working on a dissertation, you have a chair's expectations to meet, you have these multiple roles and responsibilities, and sometimes those multiple roles and responsibilities end up impacting each other and conflicting. So the piece around gender that we're finding and discovering is the notion that we go out and experience stress and control it has often been around a very, I don't want to use the word male model of stress, but a linear approach to resolving problems, a fix-it, if you will, approach to resolving problems. And what we're finding, I want to mention a few kind of key gender differences that we're finding in the literature. This notion of balance has to do with internal and external locus of control. Now, your character, your personality may set up to be a fairly self-sufficient, self-directed person. You may have developed very good managerial skills, very good skills in independence, very good skills in assertion. The thing is, when you come into a structure that is set up to say, we want you to be independent, but you still have to answer to us, then I get some smiles from that one. You're living with what? A discrepancy in what you're being told to do and what you get back. So I want to validate your reality. Should I whisper that? Because I'm one of them. I name that in my classes, by the way. I'll say to my students, you know, I'm telling you all these things, and I am the one in power. You're right. I do own that power. I want to try to shift it to be as collaborative as possible, but at the end of the day, I'm making choices about your life. And I think it's important that we all share that conversation and not hide it under the rug.
I think we have a, you guys have a right to have a discussion about that conversation. That's empowerment. So what we're finding is the structures that support you in a college campus are incredibly important because your power can be taken away. You may shift from internal locus of control to feeling that you're an external locus of control because the structures aren't in place to support you as much in the emotional independence you want to achieve in doing the work that you're doing. Having said that, let me also say, I still think you're responsible for your emotional attitudes, for what you get done during the day. I still believe in self-direction, initiative. It's all about how you make meaning around stress that creates the situation distressful or eustressful. You guys still have to make hard choices about priorities, about whether you go talk to your academic chair about a problem that's going on. You're the ones that have to make those choices and decide ultimately how you're going to handle any particular issue. So it's a balancing act. Evidence suggests that persons with internal locus of control are more independent, cognitively capable, mentally aware. Evidence also suggests that females may experience fear of success in competition with males, but that internal locus of control in females may be positively affected by other females. So, you're going to hear me talk a lot about relationships today. And guys, for you too, I think a relational understanding is something that's been under-supported as a norm for males as much as for females. I think it does us all an injustice when we don't talk about supports as a means of connection. The other big finding in research is women graduate students do much better if they have female role models and mentors in place to support them, to guide them, to help them, to direct them, to collaborate with them. And we find that we have a paucity of females in power positions in the academy, so that creates another gap, that creates another central source of stress. The academy is still largely, has at its center and source a patriarchal way of handling different types of issues, from tenure to achievement, and research supports that. Women in male-dominated programs, such as science and engineering, express lower academic self-concept. How many of you, by the way, are women in science and engineering? We'll have a little discussion about that. See if you agree or disagree with that. Students in gender balance programs report significantly higher academic self-concept. So there's an attachment issue that goes on around relationship here that is influenced by the mentoring we have, the role models that we have. Women in male-dominated programs experience less sensitivity in their departments to family issues than other students. They also reported lower academic self-concepts and lower career commitment. Women of childbearing years tend to drop out of the academy to have children, and then once they get back into the academy, of course, fertility disadvantage. So there's a number of studies. For women, mentor support was related to academic self-concept, family issues, and stress. Thus, women who perceived greater mentor support also reported higher self-concept, greater sensitivity in their departments, course family stress, and less stress in general. So having a peer or mentor, having someone also in a power relationship that's a mentor, both for men and women, is definitely an important consideration when you're trying to move through stressful situations. I will tell my students they're going out on internship, one of the keys to their success is whether their supervisor matches them, helps them, supports them, validates them, and at the same time, obviously, challenges in appropriate ways. Relationships are key. So, the other thing I want to say for all of you is we're going to be talking some about role strain today. Right now, I want you to sit and reflect. I want you to count on one hand or two, depends on what you're doing. How many different roles do you have? Student role, do you have a student role? Significant other role? A parent role? A teaching role? Name the different roles you have in your life. Employer role, some of you work and go to school and parent. How many have two roles? Y'all have at least two. How many have at least three roles? How about four? How about five? Well, we've got a few fives. Come see me after this.
We need an individual session.
So role strain, we tend to believe we have to balance multiple roles. And in trying to balance multiple roles, a ball gets dropped and we feel what? We feel like we've failed. Tony Robbins, I don't refer to Tony Robbins a lot. He's a great coach and motivator, but he primarily, I think, has been most useful around the areas of looking at roadblocks or obstacles to success. And he says there are three things that get in our way the most. I would agree with these. At the core, fear of failure, fear of rejection, and frustration. Just living with frustration. And he said, those three things will always be with us. We have to learn how to manage them. So, having said that, I want us to direct our attention to how we do that. One of the things on the handout here that you guys have is talking about this notion, and I want to give a head nod to that right now. Stress is our response to situations that we perceive to be new, unpleasant, threatening, or demanding. Remember here that it says response. Things aren't stressful until we perceive them as stressful. What is stressful for you may not be stressful for your peer, and that may even increase your anxiety because you're saying, why aren't they stressed out? I'm stressed out. So we have to note that individual differences play in. Within that context, then, I step back to what I was saying earlier about being in the academy and also socialization. This notion of central relational paradox comes out of Jean Baker Miller's work from the Stone Center. And the idea in this is that women are socialized to hold voice back, to hold parts of themselves back, to stay connected. And that during socialization, their voice goes underground in the service of the other. So that for women, often a central competing commitment is self-care versus what? Care of others, self-sacrifice, care of others. That this competing commitment is central to women's lives and to stress. That is not to say that men don't carry that. Men may indeed carry that, but they may respond differently to how they carry it out. They may respond through debate, through finding ways to be more in control. They tend to find more fix-it, problem-solving solutions right off the bat. For women, the idea is to find a way to stay attached and have voice. That is central. How do we tell our instructor that we have a concern about our grade that we think is legitimate without feeling like we're going to come across as weak or petty or whatever? Those questions come up. So one of the pieces we want to talk about here is making sure that you're balancing both voice and self-care along with concern and generativity for others. Okay, here's where we take a timeout. There's only so much the brain takes in before we need to do something with it. So I want you to go to the second page of your handout. Does everybody have a handout now? You good? Go with it. I want you, literally, right now, I'm going to ask you to bring your energy into the room, and I want you to think of specific triggers you are faced with right now
I want you to pick the primary triggers that you are faced with that feel fairly constant and chronic for you. These are examples underneath. These are by no means the only examples. You all, what we want to do is tailor these around your life here. What are the things that interrupt the flow of your life? And I want you underneath these triggers. If there's different categories, write those categories down. This is really important. Make sure you have triggers in different categories. Because what happens is these triggers merge, and we need to separate them before we go back to how you're dealing with them overall. So write the categories down and write two or three triggers that fall under those categories. Make sure that you are putting down the top two or three that you find most distressed about. We'll make sure you get one. Let me check and see if I've got one. How many do we up? How many do we need? As you look at your triggers, I want you to look at them and analyze them in this way. Control. Is the situation by you perceived as something in your control or not in your control? Just on the side there, you can have control have or control not have, however you want to head nod that. We know that if we feel in control of a stressor, we feel more likely to handle it, manage it, doesn't get in the way as much. So a lot of you may have external, don't feel like I'm in control. The second thing of control is, do you feel like the only way to control it is by managing the situation? Or do you feel like you have the possibility of managing? situation. So in control, not in control, does the situation dictate or do I dictate? Demand. When our resources are taxed, that means there's high challenge and low support. So on demand, I want you to look at the stressor and say, how much support do I have to manage this stress? What does my support look like? You can think of family, you can think of boss, you can think of friends. When we have a supportive, I was listening to a woman talk yesterday with medical students about chronic stress. And she said, because she had a daughter, she had to take to the hospital a lot of different things. And she said, the thing that has made a difference for her is her boss understands. She said, I've had a boss that didn't understand, my stress went up. Boss understands. I still get the work done. I just do it at different times. It makes all the difference in the world. So, on demand. Sometimes our significant sources of support are also our significant sources of stress.
So then we have to look at that.
Sometimes if you've moved here from someplace else, you don't have enough social supports. And I always say, you need at least three people. You can call at 3 a.m. in the morning if there's a crisis. Do you have three people in your support system, your ready on the go people, they're there for you that you can call if you have a crisis? Supports. And finally, predictability. Predictability has to do with, do things just come up on the calendar at the last minute that I'm having to respond to? High or low predictability versus high predictability. When I look at the week schedule, is it usually, I have stress, yes, but it's usually the same stress, and I know when it's going to happen. Or is it like coming at you and you never know when to predict it? So, low control, high demand, low predictability, those are challenging stressors. Those are challenging stressors. So we want to look at how to help ourselves. I'd be curious if any of you would be willing to share some of your triggers. That would help me know even that I'm, you know, we're getting the right focus and so forth. Because I'm sure whoever is, sorry about that, I'm sure speaking of stress, this is when you have your phone go off and you turn it off. Would some of you mind sharing so that we can see if others in the room might feel similarly? It's always nice to feel like you have support in the room, and I'm seeing some head nods around things, but I suspect we have some support. What are some sources of stress that you guys would head nod to? Yeah.
Like, I have to do something, but I know I cannot do it now.
What, like, could you give an example of what
like,
that would be?
I have a previous class which I have to work on. Data and a draft of paper, and right now I'm in class schools, and so all the assignments and all these things, they are first priority. I have to do them, and the other part has to be done, but somewhat later, and it's later, 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 later.
So you have some things that have to be done right away, and they take precedence, but then that pushes off other things that are similarly pressing on you.
They are always there, but back of mind.
They're always in the back of your mind. Perfect example of how we never live in the present moment. Because we always have a worry about what the next step will be, what we have to do to take care of something out there. So being away from, and we're going to talk about mindfulness as one of the keys here, but being not present with ourselves is a key source of stress. So you just named one. What else? What else do you guys find is repeated?
Yeah. I have, I work as a research assistant on a major project, and I work 20 hours a week every week, but it's never the same 20 hours, ever.
Because they can't give you a regular schedule?
I work in the school system. I go out and test. And so one week I'll work from 8 to noon, 4 days a week. The next week I'll work from 8 to 9, and then from 1 to 3.
How are you able to plan around that?
You can't. You just, it makes it really hard to get anything else done, because I can't guarantee that I'll have a block of time, like writing a paper. I might have a day next week where I can sit down for 4 hours in the afternoon and work, but I might not. I might have 3 hours, but they're broken up into 45-minute blocks from 8 until 3. And I don't find out until the Wednesday of the week before. So I have no idea what my schedule for the week of November 20th is going to be.
In a 24-hour period, what percentage of time can you control? Do you control the mornings and the evenings and the middle day?
I can control before 8 a.m. and after 4 p.m.
Okay.
But my prime working hours, when I do my best work on school projects, are also
being taken up by the unpredictability of your schedule, right?
Mm-hmm.
Good. That's a great example. You guys are nailing it. What else?
Sort of the same thing. At work, the standard day is 10 to 12 hours. Not really leaves much time for anything else.
No. So by the time you get home, you're already exhausted and you have other things on your plate to do, don't you?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Just in general, prioritizing, I think, in mind of all this stuff is, you know, when you have research projects that are really external to anything at Vanderbilt even, and you've got your classes and they're all equally important, but, you know, just do your coursework first and then hope to get around to the other stuff, which is equally important, if not more important.
Sure.
But for the day-to-day, it's hard to sort of, I have a lot of times, a lot of trouble prioritizing what to sort of focus on, like, at this moment.
Yeah, exactly. So managing schedules, priorities. High demands. All right.
So during the course now, what we're going to be shifting into is me asking you some tough questions about how to do just what you said. How do we make tough choices around priorities? And I'm going to tell you that our culture feeds us at the idea that we can do everything. And you're going to have to make a decision over the course of your life and experiences whether or not that's true. We probably can do everything. Not sure we can do everything. We certainly see people out there that seem to be managing it, keeping all these balls in the air, so we feel like we're failing if we're not doing that. But really, it comes down to what are the important core values for you. So that's what we're going to begin discussing. As we move now into looking at patterns, because the next thing, you've identified triggers, I want you to think about what particular pattern comes up for you. And what you're going to do is take the next, let me see your sheet. Down here where it says, what are specific competing commitments from your top categories that you described? If it's family, if it's school, if it's work, I want you to put down, if it's self-care, I want you to put down a central competing commitment for you. For example, I want to spend more time with my kids, but my boss over here is saying if I don't meet this deadline, that's going to fall apart. So find a competing commitment that comes up chronically for you and is a source of stress. I want to spend more time on my own spiritual growth and awareness, but where do I do that in the 2 hours I have at night after I come home and I'm exhausted? So that would be a competing commitment between self-care and achievement. Remember that what we're doing here is balancing out values that are important to us. We want to find out what goes to the core of your values. What are the competing commitments in your life? Perhaps it's being a good friend and being a great student. So it's self-care versus self-sacrifice or self-generativity. may have competing commitments in the same category, like wanting to be with your husband or your wife and needing to play with the kids, or wanting to hang out and study with your study group at school but needing to work for the graduate assistantship job. So find something that's fairly chronic for you. To the person sitting next to you, I want you to talk a little bit about competing struggles. And part of the reason for that is just to get some support going and allow yourself to concretize what you're talking about. The more you talk something out to another person, the more it kind of settles in. So you can talk about the struggle in general terms. You don't have to get into specific details, but I just want you to name a couple of in different ways competing commitments collide for you, just with the person next to you for a moment, and then we'll move it back to looking at the stress management.
Thank you.
some of the struggles and competing commitments that, that are going on for you. And hopefully, as you're talking through these different points, what you're going to realize is that you share a lot with other folks in the room, and that also tends to decrease stress, knowing that others out there are validating your reality and right there in, with you in the middle of the struggle. So next, what I need to turn your attention to, and I'm wanting to do this and not spending as much time today as I'd like because we're cramming up a three-hour workshop into an hour clinic, is I want to turn you now to looking at the stress pattern. And here, a concrete pattern, folks, is what I'm wanting you to do. You're going to turn to where the cycle says, turn the next page. Sorry, I'm looking off your sheets. Before we do that, do the stress burnout symptoms. So let's see if we identify any symptoms in a particular area for you holistically. So work those next. Just name what comes up typically for you with stress. Good. I'm sorry you have to go.
To class.
Well, stop by sometime and see me when we're finished.
Great. Thanks.
Symptoms, see if there are some typical symptoms that are constants for you in terms of how they can come up, because that's going to determine kind of your stress control timeline. If you're the type that's a worrier, if you're the type that has panic attacks or anxiety attacks versus somebody that's obsessive or compulsive or cognitively thinking through everything all the time, of course, academia creates you doing that too. So there are some things situationally that just are going to happen. But I want to see if we do have any types of particular patterns that you're noting right now as you go through that list and look at places. Is there an absence of spirituality in your life? Is there an absence of time for you to really attend to the personal, the meaningful, the purposeful, the significant, in the here and now, not 10 years from now, but right now, what matters to you, the mattering, is that there for you? Is meditation or prayer part of that process? Talking about how these different control pieces from your management plan can factor in. So note that right now, and now I want you to turn to the response set, and then we'll work on your plan. So move to the stress pattern, and what you're going to do is identify from your list a trigger that you noted prior when we're working on triggers. And you're going to identify the pattern that goes with the trigger. The trigger is first. So let's say you walk into the office, boss doesn't acknowledge you, just hands you a list of to-dos for the day and a timeline. You say, okay, but you're internally resentful and angry about it. You're anxious. You realize that you've got a lot on your plate. You'd already worked really late the night before. You weren't very appreciative. You feel wasted, spent, exhausted.
and you don't feel like you're being valued in that company. That may be. So come up with what you see based on your trigger, your normal way of thinking it through, what's going through your head when the trigger happens. What do you physically do when the trigger happens? Do you shut down? Do you withdraw? Do you overcompensate? Do you just try to spend more and more time during the day to finish it? What is your normal behavioral response? And what are typical symptom responses? Now, I know you generate a lot of different stress patterns. Try to pick one that is a fairly good routine for you. For me, it's procrastination. I'm the last minute to get things done, and then I get in a carried away about it. So everybody has kind of their central one. Up here, can TV be a response? It's a primary response. Channel surfing, oh my god. Brain numbing. It's way to download. And you may have good adaptive responses with some of these too. It's just that the stress is overwhelming. Yeah.
Sometimes the symptoms don't really connect with the stress.
Sometimes the symptoms don't connect with the stress, or
I mean, you don't realize they're because you're stressed out about something and they feel like they're their own stress during itself.
That is so true, that the stress creates a whole separate stressor, which is the physical reactions to the stress, and then we're trying to manage it. That can be things like managing migraine headache, a somatic symptom. A lot, you know, if you look at my body literature, of course, you realize that disease processes are implicated in stress. Okay. So, you're looking at this pattern, and now I'm going to ask you the gut check question. Why don't you change it? If it's a nuisance for you, what is it that's getting in your way of changing it? Ultimately, aren't you in control of your life? Why do we have this problem? Yeah.
Part of, like, one of the triggers that I use is, like, deadlines.
Yeah.
And even though, like, during the course of it, I get very stressed out.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to do very well as a result.
Beautiful. Yeah. So you're getting rewarded for your negative coping. I often go there first. I often find that. You guys are here because you're really smart, you're really capable, you're very talented, and you're incredibly adaptive. You have learned how to use strategies to make it work regardless. The problem is the quality isn't working. You're still getting fairly good outcomes. Maybe some of you aren't getting fairly good outcomes. But the problem is you are realizing that you're continuing to use things that don't allow you to enjoy your life as much, would be my guess. So I'm going to do the second question is, well, what ultimately are the values that are in conflict with each other? And here, we only have time to do this today, there's a whole piece around addressing, expanding our awareness of our past and how the internalized messages we got about how to be good and capable people in the world got reinforced at an early age. So we learned how not to fail, and now we're afraid to fail because, by golly, if we fail, we'll be perceived by our peers or our bosses or mentors as no good. There are gut places we go with anxiety that we just tend not to look at because it feels too painful. So the reason I'm bringing that up is to encourage you that if there's a pattern that's embedded for you, doing some work, doing some counseling around that can be very beneficial. But also doing a stress management plan can help release that experience of stress that feels core and embedded. Did other things come up for you in general around looking at these patterns before we switch to how to maybe begin to handle these patterns? Okay.
I find that if I try not to be a martyr type of a thing, I feel better. So if it's a negative thing, if I think, I stayed up till 1 o'clock last night doing this, then I'm more tired the next day.
Sure.
And I'm giving my permission for me to just be ornery. And then,
And that helps?
No.
Oh.
It's very unhelpful, I find.
So you're finding then that you've tried some strategies and they're still not working in the way you would like them to.
I don't know that I'm trying them.
Okay.
They're just happening.
They're happening to you.
The chronic one that I see is when you, especially if you have poor time management skills like me, you have all these things you have to do, and so you have all these deadlines to meet, and then just don't quite have enough time to eat.
Oh,
so all
yeah.
Time, like another hour, and then 3 hours later, you're angry. You're mad because your blood sugar is non-existent. And then that makes your work just terrible. Like, you're pyketic gradients on your feet, whatever. And then it just keeps, rolling. Then when you eat, because you're eating in starvation mode, and you have these weird metabolic problems that happen, and those cause more stress, and it just kind of cycles back.
You have got it. You are on it. Mine would be if I woke up and I didn't get enough sleep, having a third cup of coffee rather than just my usual two, which of course then offsets over the course of the day. It's good for you. So, yes, we all have our little plans that work okay but aren't working as well as we would like. So what I have to tell you then is that there is a way around this, but the only way this will work is if you really have a commitment to changing it. Nobody can make you change but you. You know that. I know you know that. I know that you realize that you've tried to change in the past and it hasn't worked. Well, at least hear the data on this. At least if there's nothing else I can do, I'm going to increase your incentive around trying to change. Because here's the truth, folks. If you do these things, it does make a difference in the way you approach your day, in your ability to talk with others and have affirming, loving relationships in your life. What is it ultimately you really want? Why are you here? Why are you here? I'm assuming most of you are here in graduate school because at the end of the road, there is something you really want. So what happens is we let all this scatter get in the way of the ultimate goal. No? Is that wrong?
I'm just noticing a lot of people's facial expressions were sort of like...
what does that mean? I'd like to know. Is something at the end of the day that you think you really want out of this? Is this a torturous exercise? I didn't hear what you said. What'd you say?
You gotta get the post hole digger at the end of the day, that PhD, that's what you hear.
You're wanting to do something at the end of the day with that PhD, and what you think right now is you have to do it a certain way because this is how it's set up for students to have to be. So you're going to have to make some important choices around, number one, what one of you mentioned earlier, priorities. At St. Thomas, there was a consideration of this when we developed this stress management workshop. This was by Gordon Pyramid. If you haven't ever heard Gordon, you should go hear him. He's a wonderful trainer in mindfulness and meditation practice, and he works in the community. but we were set up to see how participants responded to doing an hour and a half a week for 8 weeks with this program, learning things like mindfulness practice, how to handle anger, how to physically in your body, particularly for men, what we find is men's arousal is very physical. You notice if you're in an argument, a female-male argument, oftentimes it's helpful for the man to take a time out from that. And women sometimes perceive that as checking out, and then that leads to a whole other conflict argument. But we have different styles of responding in our bodies to stress. So physiologically, having training in body, whether it's Tai Chi, yoga, certain kinds of stretch, certain kinds of Eastern practices are very, very helpful. So the combined components to the training are mindfulness, expanding awareness of core conflicts, which means cognitive restructuring. If you go to your next page, look down below. There's a couple of things I need to tell you on this page. The one that says stressors and coping and so forth, that page, this page. If you go to that page, I want you to look down at adaptive responses. And there's something there that's wrong that I noted but didn't have time to change. It says, can I change the situation is under cognitive and emotional. That should be under adaptive behavioral. And can I change my perception of the situation should be under cognitive emotional. And also under cognitive emotional, what I would put there is mindfulness training. Just add that as a piece. That's really at the core of what we're talking about when we're addressing cognitive challenges. So we have a three-pronged approach here. Increasing mindfulness, expanding awareness of core conflicts. If at the core, now this gets into counseling and a little bit of psychotherapy. You don't have to do this, but I'm going to let you know this. It can be helpful if you've got a really stuck place. If at the core there's an old family pattern that's interrupting you because it keeps coming up around fear of failure, around achievement, or around different issues from your childhood or life experiences that continue to inform your current reality, those need to be addressed. So a piece of mindfulness is just looking at one's patterns that have arisen, not because you wanted them to, but because you internalize them. You metabolize them from growing up in a household, a family, a life experience, a culture that made you start hanging on, not made you, but you suddenly started hanging on to an embedded message, and you just never got in control of it. You've never gotten awareness of it. So part of this is the painfulness of coming up against messages we want to let go of. So a piece of mindfulness training is letting go, and the practice is really about what we want to hold on to and what we want to let go of. And mindfulness is about presence. It is about bringing you physically, spiritually, mentally, emotionally, into the moment. Your thoughts aren't over here on the next class, the next test, the next debate with your professor, the next conflict with your child. They are with you in the room. You are here in the present. So increasing mindfulness is a key component of managing stress. That also gets into ways of reframing, rethinking the fear of failure, for example. Cognitive therapy approaches with that can be very beneficial to you. Second is training and physiological awareness, what we were talking about. Get into a practice, some type of practice that has at its core an awareness of body. So again, stretching, yoga, Tai Chi. You can even do this at home. You can rent tapes and do it for 15 minutes. We find that even if people practice this 10 minutes in the morning, it has an impact on the way you experience and hold different types of stress. And then what you all were talking about a while ago, the third key component is coping and problem solving. That gets at behaviors. What is your time management plan? What is your problem solving plan? How assertive are you? How do you organize your day? The person that was talking about having a schedule where it wasn't predictable. Hard choices have to be made. Do I continue to live with that piece being out of balance and try to bring balance over into another part of my life? Or do I work with this piece? And if I work with this piece, that means you're letting go of something. What do you need to let go of in order to have the life you want to be living? What do you have to let go of? so as you're thinking through that, then the back page, from your list on patterns, on the pattern that you're looking at, and then I want to take one person and walk through this piece, because partly what happens is you start doing this and you go, well, yeah, I can be assertive. Yeah, I can exercise control. Yeah, yeah, I know all about mind reading and negative predictions. I know I'm not supposed to wander out there in the world and blah, blah, blah. So it doesn't work that way. It works from the point of finding the key question that's preventing you from enacting this plan. And the idea is that you look at your pattern, you find out which statements you're making about yourself that are getting in the way of changing your practice. You find out which feelings. Mindfulness training works well with positive, negative feelings, with anxiety. Again, anxiety, depression, hostility. I would get in some kind of practice that even if you're just doing it an hour a week, we know it makes a difference in terms of learning how to do mindfulness. It's a very helpful practice. Gordon actually did a program over here and does them occasionally, so we can get them back and I'll come back and actually experience that.
7 o'clock on Wednesdays.
Ah, right there. I didn't know that. 7 o'clock on Wednesdays. Go over.
I'll fix chapel and Bethlehem. Gordon does a meditation group from 7 to 8 p.m. on Wednesday.
Hey, if you do that one thing right there, you report back to me in 8 weeks. There'll be some changes.
Is there a cost or fee?
No.
Benton Chapel, 7 to 8 p.m.
See, we had the answer in the room. I love it when that happens.
It's all faith chapel within the little bit.
7 to 8 p.m.
P.m.
Okay, now I'm going to really stress you. I want you to go to time management, and I want you to look at the roles you're carrying, and I want you to think about what would happen if you drastically altered a role, one of your roles. What's your fear? If you drastically alter one of your roles. If you're not a graduate, here's an example. In my program, I had a young woman that wanted to graduate at the normal time in May, and she was doing a thesis, but she wanted to do the thesis, and she wanted to do her graduate assistantship, and she wanted to do her internship, and there were all these things she wanted to do, and in the end, what happened was she couldn't do them all, so she had to not graduate in May, and she was very disappointed by that. But we kept saying, that's a lot to be balancing. The gut check is, you can't do all those things physically. If you lay them out on the table, you can, but you're here because you don't want to keep doing them the way you're doing them. What's so hard about letting go? What if we can't do everything on the plate? What's your fear? What are you afraid will happen if you let one of these roles or conflicts go? Or what's your fear if you address it? If you've got an intimidating boss, what's your fear about approaching him or her about the issue? That's the push. That gets at the internalized message of what you're living with that you're unwilling to let go of. Anybody want to name one? Because this is really the good part. Because you don't change until you confront whatever that piece is that's unwilling to be confronted, or it's part of us, or we're afraid we'll change too much if we give it up. Right? Anybody?
So it's something like perfectionism.
Yeah. Oh, good. I love perfectionism. What do you gain by being perfectionistic?
It's motivating. And you know you're never going to get there.
So for you, that's a good thing. So what's the downside of being a perfectionist?
You never stop trying, and good enough isn't good.
It takes time. What? It takes a time that you shouldn't always be spending doing it.
Okay.
Yep,
and so what percentage of you really likes what perfectionism gets for you and does for you and who you are as a perfection being? Versus what percentage of you doesn't like it? Because if you're not in enough pain, you're not going to change it.
Sometimes you need to be perfectionist when you're experimenting. Sometimes it's important.
So maybe there are times when it's important to push and times when it's important to let go.
Right.
Do you know when those times are? So why don't we know when those times are?
It's hard. Because it's hard.
What makes it difficult to know? Anybody, what makes it difficult to know? Yeah.
Part is that you're always being pushed and told that you need to know perfectly.
By who? Who's pushing you? I'm not telling you that. I'm a professor. Why aren't you listening to me? I'm not telling you to push.
I'm not on your grade.
What did he just say?
You're not on his grade.
What's your name?
Preston.
What did Preston just say? He said, you're not on my grant. Is that what he said? Yeah. I'm not on your grant. I'm not on your dissertation committee. I'm not your wife or I'm not your significant other. I'm not your best friend. I don't have power, do I? So it's about power, isn't it? And what are you afraid will happen if you challenge that authority? What are you afraid will happen? How do you even know it's going to happen? So what's wrong with conflict? Let's bring it on. Embrace it.
It's stressful.
Yes, it's stressful. Is it as stressful as what you're living with right now?
Well, that's what you have to decide. Sometimes I've decided no. Sometimes
yes.
I've decided yes. But in both scenarios, I find it stressful. Like, I've confronted people, it's stressful. I don't confront people, it's still stressful. Like,
because the fear is, and this is very true, particularly true, I would be interested in the men's opinions in here, but particularly true for women, is we want to remain connected in the middle of going through conflict, and it's particularly stressful to have a conflict where we feel like we have to be in debate mode. We are about dialogue. We are about wanting to communicate, get along, attach, bond, do those things that are collaborative. Academia doesn't support that, you're right, and therefore at times it's very stressful. But that's also a negative prediction in that ultimately we don't know the outcome until we make the confrontation, and you're right about managing psychic energy. On your sheet, you have to scale how much it's getting in the way. Do you obsess about it every morning when you wake up? Do you obsess about it at night? Is it influencing you not having the friendships you want? Are you withdrawing more or isolating more? The things that are becoming impediments to your own growth and development do need to be confronted. And the other thing to say about that is, before you ever confront, get three people who you love, who know you, who support you, who are in your camp, who validate your reality. Make sure your reality is, at least have good access. Your good friend should be able to check that out with you as well. The hard part in our world is we're so socially mobile, we do not have the support systems we need to go through the conflicts. We feel we have to do it on our own. And we feel if we're not doing it on our own, we are failures. So we don't share what is going on. You don't have to share what's going on with the world, but I'm telling you, you do need to share with your support group, and you need to have one. If you're in graduate school without a support group, see me immediately. You need to have a support group, peer group of friends, that you can communicate your deepest fears with. It's only through getting them out and validation that you move forward with this. But you've got to make that choice. You've got to determine which those psychic energies, which on your priority list, have to get changed. And then make a commitment, even if it's just to this 1 hour a week that we're talking about with women, that could be incredibly helpful. Or 10 minutes in the morning when you wake up, doing some stretching exercises, or wherever it is, start little and allow yourself to have the buddy system. Also helps. I have a friend that gets me up on the days that I'm going to do that because I know I'm going to sleep in. But we have a little commitment, okay? We're going, a little walking, power walking it up. So you have to create systems in your life that support your lifestyle change. You buy that?
Yeah.
Ultimately, it's, figuring out again how much of this you're willing to go through to get what you want in the current situation and how much of this is ready to get changed right now. And my hunch is if we all were able to sit around in a room for like a day or two, I'd get a lot of young people. It's just that. But if we were doing this over the long haul, I would. I'd find out what the piece is that is preventing your motion forward, but you've got to percentage it out. If your incentive is, if it's working more for you than against you, you're not going to change it. If you're getting too much out of it, you don't see what you're going to get out of it by switching, you're not going to change it. So we have to know what the incentive is for you to switch. Part of you in this room right now wants to change. Part of you doesn't. That's the reality always that we come in with. Not all of us wanted to fully change. If you wanted to fully change, you'd already changed. If you didn't want to change at all, you wouldn't be here. So part of you wants to change. Time to start having a dialogue with that part. I don't know if you would have been on the other side, and I watch what happens with students, and I don't like it. I don't like that we create kind of a culture that does that. I think we need to think about creating a new way of doing what we do, not just in the academy, but in life. Thank you for being here. I'll hang out for a little while. What I would suggest you do with your sheet, and again, apologize because I don't want you to walk out with some things, is pick one thing that you are willing to change. It doesn't have to be a mountain. Just something. Try something different. And if it comes down to a time management piece, what are you willing to change? One thing on your schedule, enact it for a week and see what the outcome is. Don't negatively predict what it is. Actually observe it like an experiment. Watch and see what you're doing differently. Social supports. I'm not kidding when I say this is imperative. And if you need some ways to brainstorm through that, I'm happy to talk to you about how to do that. But that is imperative that you at least have three people that you have in your camp that you communicate with on a regular basis. Better if you can physically see them too, but I know a lot of long-distance relationships are also incredibly valuable. Diet, sleep, and exercise. Exercise is becoming incredibly more and more researched and known that it's important to include in your schedule. Can you put 3 times a week, 20 minutes in your schedule for doing exercise? Fast walk, aerobic, strength training. Can you build that into your schedule? Spirituality is coming back to, ultimately, what do you want in your life? And how are you supporting it by the behaviors you have right now? What do you want? What are the top 3 things in the world that you want? And how are you supporting it right now? And if you want a PhD, then yeah, at times it's going to be stressful because you're working through a tough graduate program to get there, and it is taxing. Within that taxing structure, are there some things that can be maneuvered or changed to make it not so taxing? So it doesn't have to be a complete revamping of your life, but it does need to be starting with simple changes that you're willing to just experiment with and see if they make a difference. Questions?
Yes, ma'am. If
any of you are interested in really developing and detailing it out, I'm happy to do that. I'm happy to meet again with you in smaller groups and talk about how to make it more concrete. But we have to get down to kind of for you what the core is and what the core rub is, and then put it into your plan, and then you've got to take that plan and you've got to work it. It's a practice. All of these things are practices. Just like studying for a test, is practicing like this as important, and can it become as important as the studies you do for your test or the work obligations you have? What can get maneuvered in your schedule so that these practices become increasingly important?
Sorry, guys. We're out of time. I'm happy to hang out a little while. Thanks for being here.
What's changing?